If your lawn is choked with crabgrass and sporting big brown spots, you are not alone. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Our hot, wet summer has been rough on a lot of plants, but it has been ideal for crabgrass. Dave Minner is a turf grass expert from Iowa State University. He's here today to help you reclaim your lawn. We'll talk about weeds, diseases, bugs, and how the summer heat can damage your lawn. We'll also talk about what it takes to keep a football field green and strong. Cindy Haynes, associate professor in the horticulture department at ISU, will also be here, and you can call us with your questions about your lawn and your garden. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and we've spent the last few weeks talking about how hard this hot, wet summer has been on gardens. We've talked about conventional gardens, organic gardens, and today we're going to talk about your lawn. ISU Extension turf grass specialist Dave Minner is here, and later on this hour, Cindy Haynes, associate professor in the horticulture department at Iowa State, will join us to answer your questions about your yard and your garden. And Dave, why has this summer been such a bad one for grass?
Well, it has been a tough one, one of the toughest ones. I got here in 95, and I'd have to rate it right up there in the top one or two poor summers we've had. And it seems like we always have some kind of disaster, tornadoes and various things that come in. And this year was floods. And we seem to have some kind of flood, according to where you are, what watershed you're in, every year. That's becoming more and more of a yearly event somewhere. But basically, we had actually a very nice start to the summer. And I'm thinking, this is going to be great. You know, we're going along, and grass is going good. But then it just started getting hot, and rain after rain after rain. And you can actually get too much water on a lawn and cause short root systems. They can begin to choke out. And then you just get the heat load on top of that, and grass can't take it. So this was a year, and it seemed to accumulate in the month of August when they finally gave it up and said, I've had enough. I'm ready for fall. So it was a combination of the heat, and you put on top of that then water and then diseases, and then the crabgrass comes in and fills in all the other spots, and we're left with what we have.
It seems like with the greenest, luscious lawns in the neighborhood, you see people doing a whole lot of watering usually, but not so much this year, I would think. But how much water is too much water for a lawn?
Well, there's a couple ways to look at that. Generally, what we like to recommend on average is about an inch of water a week that you would put on a lawn is what it needs, either from rain or from some type of irrigation. But most lawns in Iowa are not irrigated with irrigation systems, so homeowners aren't out there overwatering their lawns too much. Those that do have an irrigation system, I'd caution them that it's a wonderful system. It's far more efficient than what you can put on by yourself by hand. But the thing you have to watch is just don't set the timer and walk away. You want to set that thing so that you can look at the lawn and determine it's getting a little bit of wilt in it, a little bit dry, and then go water it for a cycle, and then lay off of it for a week instead of watering it every day or every other day. Just because you got a system, it doesn't mean you need to overuse it.
Well, let's talk about heat, too, because obviously you want sunshine for your lawn, but how much heat is too much heat?
Well, this year we had, there's a stress index that the Iowa State measures, and we got into the month of late July and August. We were on the stress index side, and it kept increasing and increasing. So we were well above normal in our accumulated temperature and stress index. And what really kind of gets them is when our nighttime temperature is 72 degrees or higher. That means that the whole day is going to have been at least 72 degrees or higher, and the day could be anywhere from 80 to even up to 92 and 95 sometimes. But when the nighttime temperatures don't get below 72, that becomes really prone for a couple diseases that we really get, namely one called brown patch and another one called pythium. And when those temperatures are like that, they can grow very quickly over a two-day period. And that combined with the moisture in the heat and there's nighttime temperatures, the diseases have a field day, and they had one today or this year.
Well, it seems like we've probably got stretches every summer that are at least that hot. Do we have a lot of grasses on people's lawns that just aren't as heat resistant as they should be?
It would be nice to, mainly what we have here is Kentucky bluegrass, and then we usually have some perennial ryegrass mixed in, and what suffers the most out of those two is going to be the perennial ryegrass, but we blend those, or we mix those two together quite often because the ryegrass comes up so quick and fills in. But it is more prone to diseases. So when we start to see these diseases or these nighttime temperatures, it usually starts in on the ryegrass and then can proceed to the bluegrass.
And that's what opens up an opportunity for crabgrass.
Yeah, the crabgrass actually starts way back in late spring, early summer. By the 1st of May, we can start to see it germinating. And in a thick lawn, you won't see it. In fact, it won't come up. If you've got a nice thick lawn, you can keep a lot of that out. But as the summer progresses, you're going to have some heat, things thin out, you may have a little bit of disease. Anything that opens the canopy a little bit and lets the light get down to the soil, then the crabgrass seeds really take off. And then by August, that's when people see and really notice it. But they got to realize that that plant was probably germinating back in the month of May, and then it's just grown so much through the summer.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question, which I'm sure is going to be blasphemy for any turf grass expert. But crabgrass is green, and it doesn't look that bad, and it's very heat resistant. What's wrong with crabgrass?
Well, I kind of like, from a natural standpoint, I kind of like your strategy. And in fact, I'll take the color first. You said it's at least green, but a lighter color green. In the United States, we are just fatuated with colors of green. Darker green is what it's got to be. In fact, all of our breeding programs have gone that way. So when we see these lighter green plants in there, they stick out like a sore thumb. But on the good side, we don't need to use as much nitrogen fertilizer on the lawns because they're already dark green. But it is interesting, I travel in Europe a bit with different turf grass programs. They really don't care about the color, not like the United States people do. It could be light green, dark green, dappled green, yellow green. It's green over there. It's good.
All right. So if you really want a dark green lawn and you really want to get rid of that crabgrass, what do you need to do about it?
A real dark green lawn, there are varieties out there like Midnight, for example. You can use that, and you cannot really get it to get any darker color with fertilizer. So a good, if you really like the dark color of grass, use the genetics. Get some of these Lomo Kentucky bluegrass varieties that are just genetically dark green, Midnight being one of them, or the Midnight types. Beyond that, when you if you had a lot of crabgrass this year, and lawns did, usually we like to not apply herbicides until we need them. But given what I was seeing this year, if you had a lawn with 50% crabgrass or even a little bit less, but let's say you had crabgrass that upset you this year in your lawn, it would be a really good reason and a logical reason to use a pre-emergent crabgrass herbicide for next year, because what that crabgrass is doing right now is dumping thousands and thousands of seeds into the lawn, and they're going to come up next year for sure. So you would want to consider and plan on using a pre-emergent crabgrass herbicide that you should probably put out by about April 15th, and that'll then put down kind of a barrier of a herbicide, and then as the crabgrass seeds start to germinate, it doesn't kill the seeds, but as the plant starts to germinate, it will take up a little bit of the herbicide and kill it.
So that's the advice that Richard Giron gives to everybody who calls in about crabgrass, is let it die off this fall, then put a pre-emergent on it. If your crabgrass has gotten really out of hand and say it's more than 25% of your lawn, is there something you should be doing about that now?
Generally we do. We just say let the fall. It's a C4 plant, a warm season plant. That's why it does so well in the heat, because it is, if you go down south and see this grass actually creeps and crawls along the top of the ground some. But it is a warm season grass, so it does so well in the summer. But the question is, just what you asked, what should you do about it? And normally we just let the the first frost begin to kill it down. But what I've seen this year is I've got sections of lawns that are just 100% covered with crabgrass. And the bluegrass that's underneath of there that's getting choked out is probably not going to make it back. So it would have been a good idea, or it still makes some sense. We're probably, it's getting close, but right now we're about 2 to 3 weeks away from our first killing frost, so you probably would let it go. But in August, I had been recommending that go ahead and use one of these post-emergent crabgrass herbicides. They knock the crabgrass down some, and then you can get it stopped, at least stop growing. And then the other cool season grass can come up through it, especially if you verticut your lawn. It will do that. But the crabgrass will hang on so long into the fall that it still even chokes out a lot of the bluegrass. It was so thick this year.
So if you put a pre-emergent on next spring, you might actually have to reseed your lawn as well.
It's what will happen here is you'll see that by Halloween and by Thanksgiving, you can assess your lawn and you can look and see how much bluegrass came back through that lawn. And then that'll give you an idea of whether it's going to make it or not. But if you had a lot of crabgrass and you're still seeing quite a bit of crabgrass on the top, you can't see much lawn underneath of it, get out there with a verticutter and chop that thing up and get the crabgrass cut up some and then just seed right into it. Because then, and you've only got about till the 1st of September, or excuse me, the 1st of October to seed. So you got 2 or 3 weeks left. Is there a good seeding window? So get out there and seed, chop into that damage the crabgrass some, and then the seed will come up and the crabgrass is going to go down with a frost.
For people who aren't necessarily fighting crabgrass, or at least that's not their only problem, what are you recommending to people as we get close to that first frost to do to get our lawns in good shape for next spring?
Well, this is a good time for lawns to be fertilized, for one thing. This is the time to put out your nitrogen. You can, if you haven't put any fertilizer on the whole year, for heaven's sakes, it'd be a good opportunity to. But generally, we recommend anywhere from 2 to 4 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. And you'd generally put out about a pound of nitrogen each application. So you could put one out this week if you wanted to, if you weren't going to the Hawkeye Cyclone game, or if you're not a football fan, go out and be a fan of your yard. But it's a good time to put a little fertilizer out, and then you could come back with another one around Halloween.
All right. And what should you be thinking about as far as aerating your lawn?
Definitely. Again, this is the time of year for that. Anything you want to do, power rake, dethatch, aerify, all those things, September and through the middle of October and even into later part of October, it's a good time to do that because the lawn can recover so well. The heat's off of us now, and it's getting to be a good time for the lawns to recover.
All right. Dave Minner is an Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist and a professor in the horticulture department. We'll be taking your calls about your lawn and your garden in a moment. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and here with me today are Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist Dave Minner, and also Cindy Haynes is joining us now. She's an associate professor in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State. Hello, Cindy.
Hello.
And they are ready to answer your phone calls. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And first up, we have John in Des Moines. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a chicken and egg question. I've got Creeping Charlie that I want to attack this fall, and I know this the best time to do it is right now. And then I also want to overseed my lawn to get new grass growing, and I don't think I can do them at the same time. So which would I do first and which would I do second?
Really, is the Creeping Charlie in the shaded area?
Is
the Creeping Charlie in the shaded part of your lawn, or is it out in the whole lawn in the full sun?
Both.
Well, if you've got some lawn there and the grass doesn't need to be overseeded in those areas, I would certainly say go ahead and work on the Creeping Charlie, and you want to get something with a triclopyr in it, and there's some ortho products that have that ortho WeBeGone oxalis killer, and it'll have triclopyr in it, and it's probably going to take a couple applications. So you could do one of those now and even one of them before the end of October if you needed to. But Creeping Charlie is one of our toughest weeds to kill, hence its name. It creeps along the top of the ground.
Okay, so and then overseed the other areas that I don't spray?
Yes, if you've got bare ground areas there or areas that are a little bit weak, you can overseed them. You can get a power rake or a verticutter, a machine that kind of chops the ground up and gets the seed in the ground. That's a real important thing. But if it's as simple as just some bare spots in the ground, like the size of your hand or so, you can make up a kind of a concoction of potting soil and just grass seed, mix it all together in a bucket or in your wheelbarrow and go around to these spots and hand spread it in there and rake it in. Still try to rake it in the ground, but if you've got some potting soil with it, it's likely it's going to come up.
How about going over it with an aerator a lot and then putting the seed down?
Absolutely. I just taught this class yesterday to my sports turf students, but anytime you aerify an area that's weak, if you can put grass seed with it, either before you aerify or even after you aerify and drag it around, it will find its way into those holes.
Okay.
And it doesn't go too deep, and it will come up in the holes. And grass that comes up in those aerifier holes is going to be a lot happier.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for your help.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. It's funny that he called it a chicken and egg question because we've recently discovered that our chickens love to eat Creeping Charlie. So that
there's a natural control. There
exactly.
You go.
We got an email about aeration that from, actually, I don't know who it's from, but it says, can I use my small tiller and set tines so they won't go too deeply to help seed tear up my yard? I'll be aerating this weekend and want to add horse manure and compost and then seed. Is this ideal?
I'm not exactly sure what kind of apparatus they have there, but as long as you can go across the top of the ground, and even if you rip up the ground a little bit and can drag it back smooth, it will regrow. This is the time of year to do that. But I would say a light tining would help. But if you're not getting into the ground at least 2 inches and making either a slice or a hole, then you're not doing what we traditionally call aeration. So you're not doing that benefit of opening the ground and letting water and nutrients and air get in there and relieving compaction. But you might be just doing another practice of verticutting and kind of getting some of the thatch out of there. So that both of them are benefits. But if your goal is to put air into the soil and open up the ground, then you want to get in about at least 2 inches.
All right. We have a phone call from Marcy in Mechanicsville. Hello, Marcy.
Good morning. First of all, thanks for that chicken tip, because I've been trying to talk my husband into getting chickens, and he ate Creeping Charlie, so it's a win-win.
Well, I hope that works out for you.
Fantastic. But my question is, we have some new construction, and, kind of new. We're headed into our second year here, and the dirt that they brought in to fill is just completely full of rocks. So we need to take that out. And my husband wanted to seed this but the whole area that they dug up that is filled with rocks is now also
You're disappearing on us, Marcy. Hello?
Uh-oh. The water grass. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah. I think I got it. You're doing a try to construct. You had bad soil, took that out, brought in other soil, and it's now filled with your term water grass, which is a real generic term. That could be either crabgrass, it could be nut's edge, it could be a lot of things that just germinate late in the season there. And what you want to do is you can spray some of that down with Roundup, and Roundup is something you can apply, and it controls many of the annuals that are coming up there. And then you can seed right into that. In fact, here's a little known trick. You can actually seed first and then apply your Roundup over top of that, probably up to 3 days after you've seeded, and it's not going to hurt the seed at all. We do that a lot in sports fields and other applications where the timing and windows just aren't right. So you can, instead of having to spray Roundup and wait in 7 to 14 days, you can do both of those operations on the same day if you like.
Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, your window's getting away from you, so I would do them as close together as you can.
Yeah, I know. And I guess another question is, he did buy two bags of seed. It's quite a large area that we have to fill. Is that seed, if we do have to wait until the spring, is that seed going to be okay?
Most likely it will be okay. In fact, year-old seed, from the time they harvest it to the time you use it, if it's a year old, it even germinates a little bit better.
Yeah,
but what you'll want to do is store it in a cool, dry place. A basement that's, got a dehumidifier in it would be fine, but something cool and dry. The freezing's not going to hurt it, but a cool, dry place would be good.
Perfect. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Good luck, Marcy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And here's a question for Cindy from Donna in Webster City. She says, can ornamental grasses be divided successfully, and what time of year is best?
They can be divided. They're not the easiest things to divide. Some of them get very large, and they have a very concentrated root system, so it will take sometimes a saw to divide them. Or an axe. I've used an axe before as well, and I think Dave has a lot of ornamental grasses too. The best time is probably in early spring. Many of those I like to divide just as they're starting to come up in early spring. They're just a little easier to handle, and I think they establish a little bit better if they have the whole growing season to kind of create a new root system or reestablish in the landscape.
Okay. Sam from Des Moines wants to transplant a fir tree, and he wants to know when the best time to do that would be.
Now's a good time. Fall's a pretty decent time to plant most trees. It's getting a little bit to the end of when we want to plant some evergreens. So if he could get it in very quickly, I think it'll be okay. It's certainly nice weather now. If he can't do it quickly, then maybe think about it in spring.
All right. And we had a question from Twitter asking about grass alternatives. Are there any grass alternatives for Iowa lawns? I've heard that chamomile might be an option.
Well, I'm the guy that grows the grass, so I don't know if I'm the guy that's going to be telling you what else to use
There are some what we call low-maintenance grasses, right, that we sometimes use, like buffalo grass?
There are some opportunities there. If you want to go totally away from a lawn, then you'll go to some other ground cover, some kind of mulching or landscaping type thing. But Cindy mentioned buffalo grass, which is an option. And the first thing to do is go to some place that has buffalo grass so you can look at it instead of just what people talk about, because it's real specialized. And I would say there's less than 0.5% of the lawns in Iowa that have buffalo grass. So it's not a big use, but it does have some nice qualities of grow slower, low maintenance. On the downside, it doesn't take shade very well. And a lot of the other things can grow into it. But some people have had successful buffalo grass lawn. I live on an acreage, and I got a couple little patches out on my acreage, and I grow them, and I like them.
And it looks a little different. And as far as the shady spots, sometimes we talk about, Dave and I talk about ground covers in the shady spots where grasses don't do well. So, and there's many options in ground covers that you can walk on, just like a lawn.
Yeah.
And you haven't heard about chamomile, though.
I haven't heard of chamomile. Though that might be great if you like a lot of tea.
It's a dual-use lawn coverage.
Yeah, you go cut it and make tea as well.
Well, if you use it, you should let us know how it works out. We've got Tony on the line now from Des Moines. Hello, Tony.
Yes, good morning. First, a quick comment on the creeping Charlie, at least the stuff that has the sun exposure. I found that if the stuff in my yard is dry, and I apply the cheapest 5% vinegar I can find through a hand pump sprayer with about a teaspoon of dish soap per gallon, it will knock it back. But it needs to be applied prudently because it also kills the grass. But I'm wondering here about mowing heights throughout the season. Are there mowing heights that will encourage or discourage the establishment of weeds like Creeping Charlie? And what should be done when there's heavy rain? Presumably the grass is growing fast. Should that be left to grow higher so that it establishes deep roots?
Well, Creeping Charlie, I think it just does whatever it wants to do.
Right.
It's just going to go and get in there. But in general, if you're mowing shorter, you're going to encourage a lot more weeds. So a good mowing height for our home lawns is 2.5 inches. If you can stand to mow it taller at 3 or 3.5 inches, some lawns are like that. That's going to just give you deeper roots and probably inhibit more weeds. But when you start getting below that height at 2 and sometimes down to 1.5 inches, some people like to keep their lawn like Jack Trice Field. And if it's their thing to do that, then they just have to realize they're going to have a few more weeds in there.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tony. And since you mentioned Jack Trice Field, Ron in Applington Parkersburg, or at the Applington Parkersburg Schools, has a question about their football field. Hello, Ron.
Hello. I'd first like to thank Dr. Minner for all the work he did getting us back on our feet up here after the tornado. And I just have a couple questions for him.
Sure.
Dr. Minner, good news, Tolagraph is gone. Bad news is I'm dealing with some ground spots. Is that just nitrogen, or what should I be doing?
Ron, I need to get up and see you. Thanks for calling in though today, and I've just been swamped with all the seeding programs and flooding things we've been doing. But I want to get to an AP game there and see how you're doing with Coach's Field. But it could be on that field. It may be some of the Poa trivialis, the rough stalk bluegrass. It's a little bit weak. Don't forget to look for the grubs. We thought there weren't going to be a lot of them, but now they're out. So go ahead and take any of those brown spots and start yanking on them and see what's underneath of them. All of our diseases should be gone by now, so it's probably not that. I know we still have a mixture of grasses in that field, so maybe it's one of those other weaker type grasses that's changing color on you.
Super. Thanks a lot, Coach. I know Aaron and everybody would want me to send best wishes to you. The owner of the Saints and stuff flew him down for the Saints and Viking game last night, so he won't be around. But thanks again for everything you did and all the information you helped, not only me, but all the schools around the area. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, Ron. Have a great season.
Gosh, Ron, thanks for the good words. But there's a, you know, it gives me an opportunity to plug the Iowa Sports Turf Managers Association. And a lot of those guys are the ones that actually came down there after the tornado and helped put the field back with Coach Thomas. And he was a coach that just absolutely loved his field. He loved the grass, and he'd get out on the mower. And when I finally got involved, I didn't know who he was, how famous he was, and until three or four years ago when I got involved with him. And just a tremendous, tremendous person, and someone who liked the field and managed the field as a coach.
Dave, let me ask you, I know you were involved in putting natural turf into Jack Trice Stadium in Ames in 1996. What do you have to do to actually grow grass in a football stadium that used to have artificial turf?
Well, while you're watching those guys run around and Austin Arnault throw passes and all that stuff, it's you wouldn't believe what's under that field. It's got 10 inches of sand, and we took 4 inches back out because we've accumulated more sand. We top dressed the field, so we've accumulated 4 inches of extra sand over top of that. But it's got basically a sand field, so it drains very quickly. It's got all kinds of network of draining pipe under there, certainly an automatic irrigation system. That one doesn't have a heating system. It's got a gravel blanket underneath of it, and then you have to have some nice qualified people. Ron just called, and he's learning to be a sports turf manager, and a pretty good one through the educational process. But we hire in people at Iowa State University. Tim Van Loo is our head man that we just got from Northwestern, and Mike Andreessen is his boss, and he used to work with the iCubs. So these guys know what they're doing on these types of fields, and we're able to take our students down there, and they learn from them, and it's a good relationship. But they attend special annual conferences, and there's a whole network of people out there in Iowa through the Iowa Sports Turf Managers Association that could help any of your schools with that. And if in your community, if you want some information about your lawns, they'll be able to help you with that too.
You know, we see a lot of football games, of course, going late into the season as even the snow begins to fly. How do you keep the grass green and strong when it's cold outside?
Well, I need to have you give a lecture, because I try to get the students thinking about that. And what happens is, as it's, we start getting frost and frost, it gets colder and colder. And then the grass stops growing in height. And when it does stop growing in height, then it's not refurbishing itself, and then the fields really start to collapse. The high school fields aren't nearly as bad as if you watch the pro fields in the north as they go farther from the 1st of November all the way through the end of December, you'll see them start to deteriorate just because they are not regrowing. Not to mention you got 350-pound guys with with steel on the bottom of their shoes that hate each other. I mean, that's another reason, but it's not recovering because it's not growing in height.
Okay, so that's an almost insurmountable challenge, it sounds like. All right, let's try to sneak in one more question from Steve in Windsor Heights. He says, I cut back my very mature honeysuckle bushes a couple of years ago, and they came back very well. Is it better to cut them back in the fall or wait until the spring?
Usually it's better to wait until spring, because sometimes in fall, if you cut them back early in the fall, it might encourage some new growth that won't acclimate. So we usually tell them to wait until spring when it's still dormant, right before bud break. That's a great time, and then they've got plenty of time to recover and look good and do what they need to do for you in the landscape.
All right, we're going to take a break here in a moment. We will be back to answer more questions in just a couple of minutes. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. I'm talking with Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Dave Minner, who is a professor in the Horticulture Department and Extension Turf Grass Specialist at Iowa State. And we will be taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are ISU Extension Turf Grass Specialist Dave Minner and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State. And we're here to answer your questions about your yard or your garden. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we have Alan in Muscatine. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have just my front yard is a thing. It's, I don't know what it is. It's real short. It's kind of an army green color. It's not yellow like crabgrass, but it's real short and kind of wiry. And it seems to be spreading here in the last 3 or 4 weeks really bad. I don't have any idea what it is or how to kill it.
It's in the lawn, not in the flower bed then?
No, it's in the lawn.
And would you think it's a grass? Does it look more like a grass or more like something else?
Well, I would say it's more like something else. So I've had a pretty good stand of grass all summer long, and I've had just a few little patches of this, but it's growing really fast now.
Are the leaves long and skinny, or are they more round?
No, there's not really... they're long and skinny, but it doesn't grow very tall. It's only like maybe an inch and a half tall, and it doesn't seem to get any taller than that. But I cut my lawn at about 3 inches, but I have no idea what it is.
Do you think this thing turns brown as the winter comes, or is it something you see all year long? I mean, it's always there.
I haven't noticed it so much until this year. I think it might sound kind of silly, but in the morning time when there's dew on the ground and the sun isn't come across, you can really see this stuff. It's big patches of it now.
Wow. You got me a little bit stumped on. Here's the thing. We do a lot of this because we can't get out to everybody's location, but just simply take a picture. And when you're sending anything in, take a picture of like the whole yard, and if you send me 3 pictures, I can almost figure anything out. Send me a picture of the whole yard, then stand and look straight down and take a picture so you're about, 4 or 5 feet away, and then get as close as your camera will let you get, and maybe pull a little bit of the plant up and take a picture, and then you can just email them to me at dminner, M-I-N-N-E-R at iestate.edu. And we'll take a look at it and talk about it. But that one's got me a little bit stumped as to exactly what it is.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
But if you think it is more of a broadleaf weed, not a grass, then and you want to try to control it, then some of our broadleaf weed herbicides, a Trimec type, would be something you would put on at this time of year. And this is the time of year to control broadleafs. If you're trying to kill dandelions and clover and those types of things, now's a great time.
Okay, this is a good time to put on Trimex?
It is if you've got, if you know you have broadleaf weeds there, but this is a good time of year to do that. You can put it on right up to the first frost and even actually after the first frost when we still got warm days. But as the frost keeps going and it gets closer and closer to, through winter and the plants deteriorate, they just don't take it up as well. But we've got, you know, a good month, month and a half of broadleaf weed control ahead of us of time.
Okay. But Trimax is it's an industrial Trimax. It's really strong. I have access to. So anyhow, I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd give that a shot. And if it does start to yellow it or curl it or kill it, then it's probably some type of broadleaf weed. But take a couple of pictures and we'll have a go at it.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Alan. And next up, we have Jan in Iowa City. Hello, Jan.
Good morning. I had to we had to replace the sod between the sidewalk and the street because there was some construction work that tore up the old stuff. And a lot of it has taken, but there are patches of it that haven't taken at all. And I'd like to know how to get the whole thing going.
Yeah, that's just a tough place to grow anything out there. And when they, you know, have the easement in there, they come in and tear it up. They either reseed or resod that. The areas that haven't taken, are they brown now? I mean,
yes.
Can you pull up the old sod?
I'm sorry?
You could pull the old sod right up out of the ground?
I don't know about that. They've got tiny little green shoots, but they're very sparse.
Okay, if there's some green shoots in there, I mean, if you look down and can discern that there's 50% green shoots in there, then that's likely to recover because the plants are going to tiller and throw in new plants. But either way, what I would do is get some grass seed, mix it with some potting soil or even just grass seed by itself and put into those areas. But the key is to make sure it's scratched into the sod. You may not get it all the way down to the soil, but work it in as good as you can. Don't think that you're hurting the yard. The more you scratch up those areas and get the brown debris out of there, the better you're going to get the seed into the ground, and that's what's needed to get it up. So don't be bashful with it.
And what about watering? I've tried watering heavily. I've tried letting just rain go. I don't have a sense of what it really wants water-wise.
Yeah, on those spots, if you were going to, I don't know how big your area is, but basically you want to keep them moist or wet for about 2 weeks to at least get the seed up out of the ground. So anytime you go out there and kind of poke your finger down in the top half inch or so, you want to be able to feel moisture there. They don't have to be floating. You don't want to float the seeds up, but they just have to be moist. And, you know, it's cool and cloudy now, so that moisture is going to hang in there. I would guess you might be able to water them every two to three days now. But the point is, especially for that first week, make sure that you keep that moist because you have to start the plant growing. Once you get it started, then it can go on its on its own a little bit.
Is it better to soak it or better to do just sprinklings every day?
What I would do is, again, scratch down in the soil a little bit, but I would put as much water as you can on before the seed floats or things move around. Now, I mean, if the water's going down 3-4 inches in the ground, it's not helping the seed at all. So the seed's right up at the surface. So that's why we do the frequent watering. It's probably a good idea to give it as good a shot of water as you can, and then frequent. If it's real hot and dry, if for some reason we turn into a hot, dry fall here, and when we're first putting these lawns in the say September, we may water 3 times in a day, just lightly to keep the seed wet if it's dry and it got a lot of wind. So the trick is just keeping it wet, whatever it takes.
Okay, thanks a bunch.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Jan. And next up, we have Richard. Hello, Richard.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, what's your question?
Big, huge lilac bush out in my backyard. It's probably 15 foot across, almost 20 foot tall, and I have schizomegas hanging down. Well, I was wondering what time of the year should I trim that back?
Well, you can prune it. You can prune it back quite severely if you want to. With lilacs, you have two options. You have the renewal pruning option, where you can go in when it's dormant and prune out the largest canes or the largest stems, take a third out this year, a third out next year, and the final third out the third year. And what this will do is reduce the height and reduce the size and not sacrifice the blooms. Or if it's just way too big and you want to just, you know, cut it in half to control the size, you can also do that. Both times, the timing for this pruning is usually in the dormant season. Think about March, sometime in that time when it's, you know, right before the buds are starting to break. It's easier to see the stems. So don't do it now. Just wait until sometime in March and to go out and prune it. And then you can decide whether you want to do the renewal pruning option, which takes a little longer but doesn't sacrifice flowers, or the more severe whack it in half. And
got some pretty big stems in it, you know, pretty big ones that need to be coming out because they look like they're starting to die, maybe.
Yeah, and the renewal pruning will actually, I like it because it will totally rejuvenate that shrub in 3 years.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you'll
we'll
have
that in about March then.
Yeah, in about March.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate what you're doing on there. It sounds really good.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Richard. We have an email from Doug in Ankeny. He says, I have an 11-foot-high red oak, which I planted last year, and it's starting to lose its leaves. Isn't that a bit early? Last year, it didn't lose its leaves until November. Many of the leaves turned about 50% brown early this summer, and there are bumps on the leaves.
Yeah, well, the bumps are probably a gall, an insect gall. There's a lot of insects that kind of create galls, and I've seen several this year. So nothing to worry about yet on the bumps on the leaves. And I've seen a lot of things kind of fall color early this year. It's just been a really kind of crazy weather year, and I think some things are just kind of given up a little bit early. So I wouldn't worry about it. The real trick is to see how it responds next spring. So if it leaves out fine next spring and grows really well, then it just decided to, like I said, go into dormancy maybe a little bit early, or maybe it's decided to have a more longer, more spectacular fall color.
All right. And Rich has another tree question. He says that they have 12-foot poplar trees that have grown up in the pea gravel drainage footings alongside of their garage. And he wants to know how to kill them. He's asking if he can kill them with tordon sticks. He's afraid that if he cuts them down, they'll just grow back.
If you cut them down, they will attempt to grow back. But that doesn't mean you can't cut them down and then paint, you know, the wound with Roundup, something a little less intense, or Tordon, and then that will kill it that way. It may require a couple of applications of either product because it is a tree that's going to try and grow again, and it's a tree that can grow in a lot of different places. And so I'm not surprised that it's even growing there. So persistence is the key.
All right, and you suggest Roundup because it's not as damaging to other things around it as Tordon might
be? Yeah, and Tordon's a little less available to most homeowners. So, but if you have Tordon, you can use that as well.
All right.
It'll work.
Okay. Next up, we have Joe in Fredericksville. Hello, Joe.
Good morning. We have some 3 to 4 year old red leaf barberry bushes that have gotten tall and somewhat gangly. Can those be pruned back to get them to fill out a little bit more? And if so, what time of year should I do that?
You can prune those back. I might prune those back with just some hand pruners, not using a shear type pruning system. So use some hand pruners, and ideally once again in spring. This isn't the best time because some of those barberries actually will fall color nicely for you too. So wait until March time frame again, maybe in April. Come through and kind of do some thinning cuts with some hand pruners, and be careful because there are some thorns on that. Mm-hmm. And you can really reshape it and control its size and make it look good. It'll take a little longer, but it'll look better if you can do it with
All
some
right.
hand pruners.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Joe. And next up we have Dave in Bettendorf. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
This spring, I planted 3 Weigelia bushes, and they grew quite well. They grew from maybe a foot and a half tall to maybe 2.5 or 3 feet tall, but they got quite leggy. There's just leaves on the top half of 6 inches or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I can throw them back next spring, I guess, but is there some way to keep them from getting so leggy so that they all have, you know, leaves on the whole stems?
Right, and I think as they get established, they will start to kind of fill in. It just has a tendency to, you know, put on a lot of vigorous growth and kind of create this arching shrub kind of habit. That's what it's trying to do. And, yes, you can prune it back. I would wait to prune this one until after it blooms. So this one has a potential to bloom in spring, and it's already set some flower buds for next year. So if you can wait until after you see a few blooms, and you may only see a few, and then go back and do a little bit of tip pruning on it. So just take off, you know, an inch or two off those tips. It will force it to branch from the center to be a little more compact, and then that will force some more leaves in the center as well.
Excellent.
Eventually, as it gets bigger, it's going to start thinning out a little bit in the center. So you might have to come back and do some pruning to remove some canes in the center so that there's still plenty of light there. But I think you're a couple of years away from that one. So just a little tip pruning, probably sometime in May or June, and you'll see it kind of fill in.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Dave. We have an email from Sharon, and she says, what can you tell me about some of those no-mow grass mixes with several types of fescue? For example, how well do they establish? How do they look if you don't mow them? And what are the weed problems?
Some of what you might be talking about are if they are fine fescues, and these are like festuca. I'm sorry, I got to use some scientific names because sometimes you'll get confused. But the fine fescues, they're shade tolerant grasses, but Festuca rubra, Festuca ovina is a hard fescue. But they are real narrow bladed and they grow in the shade. They have used them in some no-mow areas also where you will just let them grow up and fall over, and they do quite nicely. They make this kind of weeping appearance, and sometimes on hillsides. So it's not too bad. In extreme heat, they can burn out, but that's an appearance that they use in some landscapes and even in some golf course areas. So I'm guessing that you're talking about the no-mow with the fine fescues. And really what you should do is try to once a year, at least every 2 years, go in and mow that off completely. If you have an opportunity to use fire in an area, you can burn those off, but certainly you want to stay within regulations. But if you can mow them down, then they don't get so thick that they kill themselves out.
Okay.
But they are usable for that kind of unique appearance.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dave Minner. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
And Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Minner is an ISU Extension turf grass specialist. Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the horticulture department at Iowa State. And, of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. And we were talking earlier about football fields, and I know that a lot of football fans will have their eyes on Kinnick Stadium this weekend with the Iowa-Iowa State game. But if you're going to watch a game on AstroTurf, the University of Northern Iowa Marching Band is going to premiere the school's new UNI Victory March tomorrow. The Panthers play North Dakota State University in their first home game of the season. The song is loosely based on the Iowa Corn Song, which was written to promote the state of Iowa back in 1912. Let's listen to a little bit of the new UNI Victory March. That's the UNI Victory March, which will debut tomorrow at the Panthers' first home game of the season. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky and Ames today. You can podcast the show anytime you like at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is now on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, search for Iowa Public Radio, like the page, and we'll keep you up to date with what's going on the air and behind the scenes. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.